Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome, welcome. You know, people may envy your life from the outside, but if you've ever felt inside that you're just going through the motions, that each day is a task to get through and check off, or that everything you touch is doomed to failure, or that you're a square peg in a round hole and don't belong in the buttoned-up corporate world, well, each of my three guests today can relate to that. They've had very different journeys and took very different paths, but whether in the boardroom or while traveling the world, they each found their purpose and passion, reconnected with their spirituality, and created lifestyles that make them feel alive. We'll end today's show with the author of The Ohm Factor. She's CEO of a major IT company who says, yes, spirituality can exist in the corporate world, and she'll share tips and tools for women who want to lead, not just live, but lead their lives authentically. In around 20 minutes, we'll be joined by the author of A Bicycle Built for $2 Billion. After several business flops, his girlfriend also gave him the boot, and he knew it was time to make or break time for him. Had to make some big, big changes. So we'll hear about his journey through 81 countries to reconnect with people, passion, and purpose. But first, we're joined by the Mystical Backpacker, and I just love the title of her new book. That's what it's called, The Mystical Backpacker: How to Discover Your Destiny in the Modern World. And my guest is Hannah Papp. She was at an American accredited university in Budapest, Hungary. And from that locale, embittered by love and disillusioned by Eastern Europe, she became a mystical backpacker. Today, she's the founding owner of an award-winning business in Washington, D.C., and is a seminar leader, blogger, and soul coach in the mind, body, and spirit field. Hannah Papp, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
And we're thrilled to have you here. We're going to live a little vicariously through your journey, which began a long time ago. It was about 14 years ago, I think, when you took this journey. Why did you decide to write about it now?
Well, I had decided to write about it then, but of course, for many of us, that which we feel most called to do is the most difficult journey to take. And so I had all the notes for my book written out in journals from that travel experience, and life afforded me other lessons along the way, and finally I decided I could postpone the dream no longer and wrote the book.
So let's go back those 14 years ago or so and look at life as it was then. You did feel, you said, as though you were just going through the day, checking it off as a task to do. You felt like, what's the point? You know, tell us what you were doing, where you were, what was going on in your head.
Well, I think internally, which I think most people can probably relate to right from the get-go, I was not depressed, but I did feel a sense of ennui about my life. You know, when I woke up in the morning, I wasn't thrilled to meet the day, even though I'm naturally a very cheerful person. So I would be able to joke around or spend time with friends and be up, but I wasn't stimulated or engaged in my life, stimulated by or engaged in my life. And I was working, I had a great job. So I had that pride of having a good job, and I had a lot of external approval about having a good job. I had a beautiful apartment in Budapest. It was built in the 1890s. It had beautiful tile mosaics and, you know, the iron cage type elevator. Mm-hmm. It was a very grand building, and it was on a beautiful street lined with restaurants. It looked like Van Gogh's painting, you know, of the little cafe out the door. I walked every day or took a tram. The tram was rated Europe's second most beautiful tram ride. So there was no point at which I felt that I had a legitimate reason to complain about my life. but it didn't feel like it was my life. It felt like I was assuming a life that might belong to someone else, or that was a kind of approved life and lifestyle, but it didn't resonate with the core of my being, my identity, my soul. And because it didn't resonate, it also didn't cause me to feel uplifted by the events I engaged in each day.
Right. I think so many people can relate to that. And to make change when, you know, for all intents and purposes, externally, everything is just wonderful. And yes, you do have all this validation externally. It takes a lot of commitment. So you say before becoming a mystical backpacker, you'd never said out loud that you needed to experience a vision quest or anything like that in order to find your way in life. You say you were history, architecture, I think, and poetry were the subjects that delighted your soul and occupied your mind. And you had absolutely no romantic notions of living in the wild or communing with a higher power or looking for any kind of transcendental experience. So what was the turning point for you to flip you from this great life in Budapest to going on this journey?
Well, I would say that it was probably midway through my first trip when I realized I left Budapest and I went off. I did buy a Eurorail ticket where I could just get on and off the train as I wanted to anywhere all over Western Europe. And I left town. And at first, I suppose I went with the intention of just being a tourist. That is, I was traveling on my own and I would go, I knew the first three cities I would go to, and I was headed straight to Italy first. Italy is half a day's or to a day's drive from Budapest. And I knew I would go to Venice, Florence, and Rome, and then from that point on, I had no itinerary whatsoever. And what's really remarkable is that by the time I arrived in Rome, there were synchronicities occurring. There were my dreams became very vivid. I would meet a person who would all of a sudden want to have a conversation about something that I was occupying my own thoughts. It was serendipity and synchronicity and joy all mixed in, and it began to feel metaphysical. It began to feel very spiritual and destined and part of a design or a plan rather than accidental. And once I entered that flow, a lot of my fears about traveling alone subsided, and I began to really, truly embrace the experience, and I had faith that when I would miss a train, I was meant to miss the train. When I didn't end up in a city I thought I would, it's because I wasn't supposed to go to that city. And it began to be a more mystical travel experience than what my intention had been when I left town.
Right. Funny how when we let go and we make space, how synchronicity pops up in our life, isn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah. So you said how you just let go. You chose not to make a plan. Why did you choose that route? Because, you know, most people want everything planned out to the nth degree. And I kind of like to go with that flow thing when I'm traveling a lot.
Right. Well, probably you remember that 14 years ago, it wasn't quite the internet age it is now.
Right.
You had to go to an internet cafe. You had to travel with, you know, these really thick books, travel books, like Europe on a Shoestring was my Bible. It weighed 5 pounds in my back. And so I think the reason I originally didn't plan it out to the nth degree was because it would have been too time consuming. I was traveling for 5 weeks, and you put a lot of pressure on yourself when you set a rigorous schedule. Now, I knew that I wanted to see the Uffizi art galleries, that I wanted to go to the Louvre. I knew that I really wanted to see the Italian and the French Rivieras. I had ideas. I knew that in Barcelona, I would really love to see the Casa Mila and the Sagrada Familia, but whether or not I made it to Barcelona after Rome was really not set to a schedule.
Right, right.
And in fact, I had originally planned, one of the things I write about in the book is I had originally planned to go to Nice. And you know, as the train was driving, pulling into Nice, I'm sure you've felt this before in your life. You know when you have this sense of foreboding where you think, I'm not supposed to be here, I shouldn't get off?
Right.
And it didn't sit well with me to be in Nice, and I just decided not to get off the train.
Isn't that
interesting? And then I thought, oh my goodness, because now I'm going to arrive. Where am I going now?
Where am I going?
And I ended up going on to Barcelona. And it was the most perfect decision I could have possibly made, because one of my lifelong friends is someone I met in Barcelona who we ended up being assigned to the same bunk beds, and that never would have happened had I stopped in Nice.
One thing that you say in the book, and I love this because I'm of the same mind here, you say, I encourage you to move beyond your comfort zone by going someplace out of your element. Why go snowboarding if your favorite thing to do is snowboard and you do it every weekend already? Do something different.
Right. You know, I really am a big proponent of growing one's comfort zones, because many people feel their dreams are not attainable only because they've not grown their comfort zone to the point where they think it is attainable. When we do things that make us uncomfortable, de facto, we're forced into a cycle of growth. And when we're growing, when we're evolving, we are naturally, a natural byproduct of that experience is that you become increasingly brave.
Yes.
And as you become braver and braver, for example, it can be something as simple as you're in another country and you don't speak the language, and you've never learned a second language in your life, but using your tablet or a book or a Baedeker or whatever you have on hand, you decide to try to greet your hostel or hotel owner in their own language, and you say, hello, how are you, in another person's language. When you see them light up and become so happy that you've made an attempt,
right,
and they may speak English fluently and turn around and respond to you in English, but always they're kinder because they feel that you made that effort. All of a sudden, you think, wow, that was a really good payoff. That was a wonderful dividend. I'm going to try to speak people's language all the time. And you start to do it more with more and more familiarity. And obviously, sometimes people will be rude to you, but most of the time they won't be.
Yeah, I think.
And so now you've grown your comfort zone.
Yes, that's a great example. And I think when you do open up and make the effort there, people are much more welcoming because they do appreciate you taking the time.
So much so.
So I want to talk about something you wrote while you were in Budapest in February 4th, 2000, and you were talking about how you were suddenly feeling oppressed by the faded glory and no longer mm-hmm. finding the darkness romantic. You end that piece with, what I fear is not the journey, but the discovery. You fear the discovery. What if even the new world robs me of the will to try? Talk to us about that, if you would.
I think many of us, once you know, okay, if you're uncomfortable in an environment or you are feeling dissatisfied, it can start to feel, especially once we're comfortable with that discomfort, that it's the lesser of two evils because it's known. Yes, well, I know that I don't love my job, but I also know that every morning I leave my house at 7:05 and I'm there by 7:40, and I know that my boss is going to walk in the door 5 minutes later, and I know that they're going to have the coffee on already. You know, all these little comforts add up.
Right.
And so even though you may be uncomfortable with the whole state of affairs in your life, it is the lesser of two evils knowing how your day will play out. And you're not feeling fear and discomfort within that paradigm. And so once I realized that staying, simply wouldn't do, that I had to move beyond my comfort zone. I was raised an only child, you know, and that, some would argue, well, that makes it easier to do things on your own. But others would say, well, yes, but when you're an only child, you are glued more to your parents, mm-hmm. because you don't have another sibling to run around with. You know, so this idea of going out into the world by myself was unnerving. And it was well outside my comfort zone. And what I feared more than traveling alone was, what if I threw away my job, compromised the situation with my landlady, left town? My friends now think, oh, she's, you know, a flake or not dependable or whatever judgments I thought they might make of me. Then I go off, I travel, I see all this stuff, I spend all my money. What if I come back at the end of that and I'm broke and I've lost my contacts, and on top of that, it didn't make me happy? That is a big hurdle, and I think a lot of people don't go out into the world or don't take that next step toward their dreams simply because that fear of failure compounded is so great.
Right. When the real failure is in not trying, if that's something you really want to do, I think.
Right.
The book is full of mystical exercises. You're not just sharing your memoir. There are some great pictures in here, black and white snaps of you traveling around and your story. But you also share mystical exercises in here. We are right at the end of our segment, Hannah. But you have five questions here in the book at the beginning. And I want to just ask you, I'm going to ask you number five here. If I could go back to a turning point in my life and give myself advice, it would be what? And let's look at that turning point when you decided to make this trip. In hindsight, what would your advice be?
My advice would be, don't be afraid. Feel, or even if you feel fear, move through it. Know that all people who are trying are frightened. Everyone who is striving, there is a part of them that feels a lack of confidence, an uneasiness, and a discomfort. But in fact, when you strive, the ultimate result is a complete step up in your self-esteem, in your joy, and in your ability to gain joy from your day-to-day experiences.
Mm. And if you could go back and experience something that you didn't, what would that be? This is one of your questions again. I'm turning them back on you.
In my life?
Yes.
Well, some of it is out of my control. So, for example, it might have been really wonderful to have had a sibling, for example, but that's, you know, not an option. I think I would have gone back and told my younger self not to start working so early.
Okay.
I was one of those teenagers who had two or three part-time jobs at the same time that I was doing well in school. And I loved having jobs and having my own money and having that sort of entrepreneurial spirit from a very young age. But I would now say, you know, go join the volleyball team and do something fun as well. Balance it out.
And so my last question for you, Hannah, I know that you're still building the pieces of the pie some 14 years later, because that's what life is. We're
right.
always adding to the pie.
Right.
But tell us some of the most significant changes that have happened to you since you took that journey and as a result of that journey even.
Well, I would have to say that many of my dreams came true. Before I left to become a mystical backpacker, back when I was even a child or in my early teens, I remember I made a list of the things that I would like to be in my life. And I knew that I wanted to be a business owner, a teacher, and a writer. And I had written this down on a list. Well, since becoming a mystical backpacker, I've done all three of those things.
Yeah, and you're still doing them. Well,
and I'm still doing them.
Yeah. And listeners can find out more about you at hannahpapp.com. Hannahpapp.com, P-A-P-P is how you spell Pap. And go check Hannah's site out, because it's really interesting. She's got some videos up there and some meditation up there. And I think you'll find it interesting. Hannah Papp, a very quick final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with.
That I hope they have the most wonderful journey and that the book will help them facilitate the inner journey and also champion them in having that outer journey.
Great. Thank you so much, Hannah Papp, author of The Mystical Backpacker. Please stay tuned. We will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And next, we're going to go to 81 countries around the world.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Made fresh each day for you. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
I'll travel. Well, I might take a boat or I'll take a plane. I might hitchhike or jump a railroad train.
Or I might just ride a bicycle. After a series of spectacular business flops drove him into bankruptcy and the love of his life kissed him adios, Jamie Bianchini hatched a crazy plan that just might make everything right. His life lacked purpose, passion, and connection with his fellow man, so he decided to go for a bicycle ride around the world on a tandem, inviting everyone he met to join him. Let me bring Jamie Bianchini on. His new book is called A Bicycle Built for 2 Billion, One Man's Adventure Around the World in Search of Love, Compassion, and Connection. Jamie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know you're touring again now. You're doing book tour across America right now, so glad you could join us today.
Yeah, I'm out in Texas right now.
So you had a series of not good experiences, business flops. You fell into bankruptcy. That drove you into bankruptcy. The love of your life. I hope your wife now is the love of your life. But the love of your life at that time kissed you adios. You're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, thinking, "What? What are you thinking?"
Well, I mean, it was just it was a low time in my life, and I was really confused on how I got there. I mean, I graduated at the top of my class. Everyone expected me to be this great success, but I ended up completely flopping out about 5 years out of college, and really hitting a low time of life where I lost a lot of friends. I lost a girl. I said the girl I didn't marry. I went bankrupt financially, and so it was time for me to take another look at my life and what my passions really were. And that's where I kind of discovered that I had been doing things that weren't even who I really was and what I really wanted out of life. There were things to kind of impress other people, family, friends, and society in general. So that's what kind of inspired this next journey of my life.
Amazing how many of us fall into that. Similar experience to my first guest. Now, I should let listeners know that Jamie is traveling, literally traveling across America right now on book tour. We asked him to jump on a landline, and so there's a little, you can hear some voices in the background, and that's what that's all about. But we've got a better connection with Jamie on a landline. So Jamie, at that point, what clicked in to say, I know that as a kid, one of your favorite things to do was escape on your bicycle. Was this a form of escapism, or what did you think was going to happen jumping on a bike and traveling around the world?
At first, I wanted to connect with my world. I had lost all sense of adventure, all sense of connection. I was just working and working and working, and it was always a dream of mine to go travel around the world. And so I decided to mix my passion for travel with my passion for mountain biking and go out and do a trip. But because of the bankruptcy and because of everything I went through, I decided to for the first time in my life, do something that wasn't just all about me. So I created Peace Peddlers, which was an organization that had some random goal I came up with to create more peace in the world using bicycles as a vehicle. And I had no idea how I was going to do it. I just created a logo and I created a name, and from there everything started to take off. And that's when the inspiration to take a tandem bike kind of manifested out of that very vague mission to take a tandem and invite strangers to come on the back seat of the tandem bike as I went around the world.
Right. Now, you started this journey with a friend. You gave yourself a couple of years to save money, and Garrick, your friend, and you did a lot of traveling together. It is very difficult to find the perfect traveling partner. So you do mention some great times that you had together, but also some tensions that arose as a point of that. So what kind of advice do you give people if they say about choosing a travel partner? One of them, I think, you've got to have exactly the same kind of goals.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, we were best friends, and we were best buddies in college, and by the time we finally did save enough money and got on the road and got our sponsors lined up, we both realized that we were actually different, and we had grown quite different. So by the time we really dug our feet and teeth into the ride, he wanted to do a lot more sport and long riding. I wanted to do a lot more interconnecting with the people and to get involved in charity work and do other things. So I guess the advice I would give is really talk through what you really want out of the trip and what you really want out of the journey, so that both of you are really clear before you head out, so that the expectations aren't met, because there's nothing worse than, you know, missed expectations, resentments that start to build between travel partners.
Right. It's a tough, you know, it always sounds very glamorous when people are out there traveling, but, you know, you were out there for 8 years, 81 countries. That's a tough ride.
It was, and most of it was by myself, because we, you know, after the first year, we ended up parting ways, and I ended up doing most of it by myself. Of course, with an empty seat on a tandem bike, I was never by myself for very long, because I was inviting the local people to come, and that was what I really wanted. I wanted to know my world outside of my own little bubble of the United States and my little city of Palo Alto, California. I wanted to know what else was out there for real, and not just what the media told me or what I was getting from various other sources. I wanted to really see it with my own two eyes. So the bike allowed me to do that and connect with people, even if there was a language barrier or a cultural barrier or a religious barrier. I was able to bridge those just using the spirit of play and that bike, and ride with over 1,000 different people. So
your Peace Peddlers is what you called yourself, your mission, your trip. You started out, you went from Japan to Australia in stage one, and then you went to South Africa, Morocco, Italy, Portugal, Brazil, back to the United States in phases 2B and 3. How did you plan this out before you went, or did you plan this as you went along?
No, I planned it out. I just grabbed a map of the United, of the world and just started using a little paint program and putting a line down it. For the most part, it wasn't anything complicated than, hey, I'm going to go around the world. I'm going to take the long way around. I don't want to just try to do it to say I'm going around the world. I really wanted to get a good taste of all six continents that I wanted to travel through. So I gave myself a nice flavor in various segments of each continent.
Right. So you do this where you just picking people up to ride on your tandem bike. Tell us how that happened. Did they ask to join you? I mean, I've talked with a lot of travelers before and people who've done bicycle rides too. One of them lives right here in Seattle and he's done the same kind of thing and was just amazed by the kindness of people and how people wanted to be part of that journey. Is that what happened to you, that they would just run up and ask if they could jump on the tandem bike?
Sometimes that happened. Sometimes it was the exact opposite, that I had to actually sell them on it and really get them over their fears of getting on the back of the bike with a stranger who, once they get on the back of the bike, they realize they have no brakes, they have no steering, they have no control at all, so they have to totally trust me.
Right.
And then I have to trust them, and because they can whack me in the head and take me out if they want to, but so it was a matter of trust, that mutual trust that was that really created some really unique connections and friendships that are still alive to this day. But yeah, a lot of it was just seeing someone walking my direction coming back from the market, and I would just invite them to come and hop on the bike for a ride, and some would come on for as short as a couple pumps and hop off out of fear, all the way to several weeks and coming on and having really just life-changing experiences for both of us.
Right. So let's talk about funding, because that's something people always say, well, I'd do it if I had the money. How did you fund this trip?
That's a great question, because I think in my case, hopefully this inspires other people, because I had nothing. I'm not a trust fund kid. I didn't have all this money anywhere, and I started from zero. I literally was bankrupt. I filed the papers in the fall of 1999, and I think the biggest thing I could give advice to is you have to set a date and you have to set a goal of how much money you need. So I set a date in the fall of 1999 to leave in the spring of 2002. And then I said, I want to save $50,000. I had no idea how to save $50,000 in 2.5 years, but that was my goal. And then I also wanted to have the bike and the equipment all sponsored as much as possible. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. I said, well, I just don't want to have to pay all the expenses for bikes and gears and clothing and all that. I'd rather have some of that sponsored. So, and then out of that intention and goal and laser focus, everything started to fall into place. I found my first job. I was always an entrepreneur, so I got a desk job, and then ended up doing a bunch of part-time work on the side. So I ended up having a couple part-time gigs and opportunities that were around, and then ended up finding 40 corporate sponsors by just staying focused on adding value to companies that would want to partner me with this vision of Peace Peddlers.
Right.
And being really, really relentless in my approach to them.
Well, so let's look at how you added value there and to many people around the world, because you managed to procure donations to provide 100 bikes to an impoverished township in Cape Town. I'm just going to read through a little list here. You dispersed 1,000 doses of life-saving malaria medication to small African communities. You started a school for AIDS orphans in Uganda and brought fresh water to a community suffering from sickness and death in Bolivia. So how did you, how did you decide what you were going to do and when you were going to do it?
Something probably different than me than a typical someone who gets into philanthropy is the goal of my trip was adventure. So the side of giving back was just as much of an adventure. Like, what I decided to do was what came my way. So, In my book, A Bicycle Built for 2 Billion, I talk about this thing called the giving radar, and it's just this, like, this mentality of every day waking up with just like a radar looking for an opportunity to be of service to other people with
right.
the gift that I've been given. So every day I did. So when I was riding, I would meet somebody like Innocent, who came on my bike in Uganda, and he shared his dream to start a school for AIDS orphans. So I didn't start the school. I just helped him with his dream, and helped him realize the dream to help and serve his community by using the skills that I had. And that was kind of the theme through. I was actually looking for other people who had skills, and the water that we brought to the village in Bolivia, that was through Bruno, who was a water engineer, and he knew of a village that needed it, and I just helped him through the steps of packaging things and adding value to donors and sponsors that would want to come in and help us both realize our dream to be of service to other people.
Right. And there's that synchronicity again when you open up that my first guest was talking about, how things just open up when you have a goal and when you have a desire and you create that space for it. Now, we're almost at the end of our segment, but you did meet your wife while you were traveling. So I wanted to share with listeners how you met her.
Yeah, I was actually at a point of the trip that I was ready to quit, and I was in Argentina, and I was having a string of bad luck, and things were breaking and being stolen, but I decided to keep going and to roll through it to kind of reconnect back with the spirit. And the next rider I picked up was a backpacker from Barcelona in Argentina, who came on for a 17 kilometer ride, who ended up staying on the bike for about 20 days. She just didn't want to get off, and I didn't want her to leave either. So she just kept staying, and she got into buying her own bike and riding alongside me with her bike so we could still pick people up on the tandem. And then she ended up getting her other bike out in Chile, and we came up to Chile and Peru and Ecuador. And in Ecuador, we ended up conceiving our first child. And so it was quite an adventure, the whole thing. And it ended up making really easy my decision who my life partner was, because I've never seen anyone who could just sleep on the floor of a stranger's house and connect so deeply with people and such a lust for culture. So it was really great that it was probably the happiest ending to the whole trip.
Yeah, there must be something to that, because Willie Weir, the cyclist I was telling you about here in Seattle, did the same thing. He met his wife on the trip and decided to marry her because she put up with hardships that you wouldn't believe. So now let's leave listeners with this. You're traveling across America. You were lucky enough to be sponsored with a Heartland RV Buzz to travel across America to promote the book, to promote the work you're doing. You're in Texas right now?
I am, on my way to Austin.
Okay. And what's your goal here?
We don't feel, my wife and I both feel the same way, that the project's not over until we let the message be heard by everybody. So make it available via ebook, via written book, that anyone in the world who can read has the opportunity to experience it. So, and getting out and doing the tour, you know, to be honest, it's a bit of an excuse to travel because we're both travel nuts. So we kind of use the book as an excuse to travel, but we're giving free talks all over the country, multimedia slideshows, and just trying to inspire the courage to connect. That's kind of our little slogan, is inspiring the courage to connect, people to pick their head up and connect with the world around them, whether it be locally the person next to them, or people out in the far away lands. I think a lot of people are living in fear, whether they know it or not, of other people.
Yeah.
And so we just wanted to kind of see if we can raise the vibration a little bit and get people to get people to get out amongst it a little bit more. And so that's the intention of the book too. And so far, people that are reading it are just really loving it. So that's a good sign.
Well, there's certainly a lot of adventure in there, a lot of mishaps, a lot of great things happen too. It's called A Bicycle mm-hmm. Built for $2 Billion. The website is again A Bicycle Built for $2 billion.com. And Survivor Man Les Stroud says this adventure is not about the bike, and I think you'd agree with that, Jamie. It is about, it's a life odyssey of epic proportions. Few of us live from the heart, and Jamie reminds us how. Jamie Bianchi, thank you so much for being with
us
today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
And please do stay with us. We will be right back. We're going to talk about the Om Factor, a woman's spiritual guide to leadership. We'll be right back.
I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 24th, it's Vet Sunday with Animal World's favorite vet, Dr. Bill Burlingame, in the studio. He's the most balanced and knowledgeable vet I know and will have open phone lines throughout the show so you can call in and get his opinion or advice for free. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Let's see if I guess that... this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing. Writing it, another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. I want to ride my
bike. And welcome back, everyone. Well, we've talked a lot about traveling the world so far this hour. With my first two guests about looking for purpose and passion and spirituality and connection. And we're going to end today with a woman's spiritual guide to leadership. My guest is Alka Dhillon. She's written a great book called The Om Factor. And she is the founder and CEO of Technolink, a company that provides information technology and management consulting services to government and commercial clients. She received the 2012 Brava Women Business Achievement Award, the top 100 Leaders in STEM Award, the 2013 locally grown honor from Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship, and the list goes on. So you can tell this is a woman who's passionate about what she does. She contributes to the Huffington Post and blogs at The Spiritual CEO. And again, the name of her new book is called The Om Factor. Alka Dhillon, welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's great to be here with you all.
So let's begin with why you wanted to write specifically a woman's spiritual guide to leadership.
You know, in my life, I've been blessed with a lot of female mentors, and I just wanted to do the same and give back to others. And I just decided to write this book in that vein. And what's been wonderful is that although this was designed for women, many men are finding great value in it and are loving it. So
yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that spirituality and the corporate world did not coexist, but now we're hearing more and more top leaders come out and say, yes, they do meditate, and yes, they do practice spirituality. And it's interesting that you are CEO of a tech company, because, you know, so many people have trouble disconnecting today. And as I was reading through your book, I thought, I wonder if Alka has a day of the week where she just totally disconnects from tech. Is that is that even possible?
That's funny. I don't know if I disconnect from tech per se, but what I do is, through the practice of meditation, it teaches you how to cultivate that true sense of being present in the moment that you're in. And in that moment, if I am in front of someone and speaking with someone or doing a business transaction or talking with a friend or whatever it is, I'm in that moment. If that moment involves tech, I'm on the phone or I am on my computer or doing things. If it does not, the technology does not come into my field at all.
Mm. So let's look at the meaning of the Om factor. You know, I think many people who practice yoga or meditation are familiar with that Om chant. But what do you mean by the Om factor with reference to your book?
With reference to the book, how I came up with the title was that I was observing so many people that I found to be in the flow of things, that whatever they would do, whatever they would touch, however they would interact with people, however their businesses were running, all of these multiple things that they had going on, they would just do it with such grace, with such flow. Challenges arose and they dealt with them without attaching emotion to them. They were just flowing. And I said, you know, my gosh, how are these people doing it? Because they are managing multi-million and multi-billion dollar corporations. Some of them are having a reach to touching millions of people, and yet they have their personal relationships, and yet they have their philanthropic endeavors. How are they doing all of that, and they're still so nice? How is that? And I realized in talking with some of these people that they all had an ingrained daily practice of meditation. And so I thought about it, and I myself have that, and I said, you know what? They have the Om factor, and I wanted to think of a way to cultivate that and share how to cultivate that in others. And that's how I came up with the Om factor, and then this book with the 7 essential tools and 7 key traits to cultivate, to raise your Om factor, to help cultivate your success and what your definition of success is, mm-hmm. because that's different for many people.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So let's look at how we can nurture our Om factor. And, you know, I hear this constantly, and I'm sure you do, people saying, and it's not just women, although with the many, many roles that everybody has today, it's not surprising maybe. But I hear people saying, oh, I just feel so overwhelmed. And you address this in your book. You give a whole chapter to this. So when you hear people saying that, what advice do you give to them?
Well, first of all, as you will see when you get this book or when you have this book, it is actually Tool 1, Chapter 1, and there's a reason for it, because you're right, this is the pervasive feeling, not just for women, but for human beings in general. What I say to people is, you need to understand that you are where you are supposed to be in this moment, and you need to accept that. And understand that you are where you are supposed to be. Once you accept that, and you accept that everything that is happening for you is for you and not to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is a big distinction. I think too many times what happens is we all sit and feel like there's just too much and there's not enough time, and here she is asking me to meditate. I can't do this. I can barely have time to pick up the dry cleaning. What happens is we place such high levels of expectations on ourselves, right? And as women we do this, especially as women we do this, because we're taught at a very young age that you need to be a great wife, great mother, great daughter, great sister. You want to pursue that career, that is fantastic. Be great at that too. You have all these balls juggling in the air, and you need to be looking great while you're doing it, and don't drop any of those balls.
Mm.
That's a lot of pressure.
Right.
It's a lot of pressure. So those expectations that are there, they contribute to the overwhelm. Once you understand that those are expectations that are placed onto you by others, and that you do not have to adopt those, it immediately alleviates things. Your long list of to-dos becomes a list that you will get through. The world will not crash if you don't, make that one phone call or answer that email at that moment. It will not crash. I'm telling you this from experience. And in the book, I actually talk about, and we can, you know, talk about it here now briefly, specific tool that you can use and that I use very frequently when this happens, that can really benefit you a lot, I think, to bring you into that space where you are just going to repeat the following affirmation to yourself out loud or whisper it or in your mind, that this too shall pass.
Mm.
This too shall pass. This affirmation was chosen based on the vibrations of the words. They have very, very distinct vibrations, and they elicit a very distinct physical response, and thereby a mental response and emotional response. I also give a Sanskrit mantra, if people prefer a mantra. Some people prefer affirmations.
Right.
And that's Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And that means, it translates to Om, peace, peace, peace. It does not matter how long you repeat these affirmations, how often you do it, but do it in that moment, and you will immediately see a shift. And that's what I do. And it has really helped me.
Interesting. I just took a new yoga class last week, and she ended with Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And I did not know what that meant, and I meant to ask her, so now I know. You know, those same kind of feelings we get when we're overwhelmed, the many roles that we have, can often lead to us feeling inadequate, which is another chapter in your book. You say it's so easy to hide by simply saying, I'm a project manager at a big four consulting firm, or I'm a mother, or I'm the CEO of a Fortune 100 company. And you say the ego mind is fueled and sustained by fear, insecurity, and the desire to be accepted. As long as these things exist, the ego mind will continue to thrive. So tell us how we stop that thriving.
Okay, and again, that's so true. And don't we all feel that way deep down? A lot of us don't want to accept that. But the ego mind, it's so important for that ego mind to be liked and respected, right? And that is something we cannot feed. And how we feed it is through fear, insecurity, the desire to be accepted. In order to curtail this, and the kind of RX for this, what I call it, the prescription for mm-hmm. this, is to truly go within yourself and spend those few minutes, not hours, few minutes with your eyes closed and just sitting in a chair. It could be at your office, it could be at home, with your eyes closed and simply observing your breath without manipulating it, without judging it, and just be. You're going to have thoughts, they're going to come and go, but what happens here is, the magic here is, your body is in a state of stillness. Your mind may not be just yet, but because your body is anchored in that space of stillness, you then breathe into that moment, and you actually sustain and keep that stillness within you after those 2 minutes are over. And I discuss this in the book, but that is how easy it is. And
right.
What does that do? It lets you connect to yourself, because that is where the issues lie, is when you don't connect and know yourself, because you're hiding behind those roles, right, of the
right.
CEO,
yes.
the project manager.
Yes.
You're not going to say to someone, hi, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. How are you? You're not
right.
going to say that.
Right.
So...
Right. Well, the book is packed full of great information, 7 essential tools and 7 key traits to cultivate for your success and well-being. Dr. Wayne Dyer says this is a thorough guide to inner peace, complete with highly specific practical tools for living. And he does say that even though it's designed for women, as a man, he found it spiritually invigorating and uplifting. And I want to just give you 30 seconds to say a final word to our listeners, Alka.
I would just like to share with everyone that please don't look without, look within. All the answers, all the keys to manifesting your deepest desires really come from within, whether that be through you want your success through money, through your relationships, through any channels that you want. Go within and do meditation and don't think about it as something that is daunting. It really only takes 2 minutes a day as long as you do it consistently. And I encourage you to get the book so that you can use these tools that I use daily to help you get there.
Awesome. And as I said at the beginning, Alka runs her own. She's CEO of a tech company. So this is obviously working for her. And you can find out more about Alka's work at alkadillon.com. And I'll spell that AlkaDillon, alkadillon.com. And the book again is The Om Factor. Alka Dillon, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Vicky, and thank you, everyone.
And thanks to all of you for joining us today. We're right at the end of our show today, so we will see you next week. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.